All right, listeners, welcome back to part two of our interview with Chuck McMillan. We're going to listen to our sponsors at the top of the show and then get right back to it with Chuck.
Well, I'm Rich.
And I'm Mark.
And we are two guys
on Block Island. What shall we do with Chuck and Sailor? What shall we do with Chuck and Sailor? Hey, Rich.
Yeah.
I am starving right now. So I want to go somewhere that's intimate, but has really great food and kind of a fun atmosphere. So you know what? I think I'm going to head down to Eli's.
Well, they got to be doing it right. They've been there since 1994.
Yeah. And well, you know, a big part of it is because Chef Erica is always there and she's making some of the greatest dishes on this island.
Oh, they got some real island favorites in my book. The tuna nachos, the arugula salad with warm goat cheese. Oh, how can you go wrong?
Totally. And you know what's really cool is that the dishes are crafted with fresh local ingredients.
Yeah. And the menu, you know, it changes too. They have exciting seasonal changes to the menu. So, you know, what you find on there in the spring, it'll be different by the fall.
Yeah. And they're always great no matter what there. But hey, you know what I really love doing is sitting at the bar because they have an amazing wine list. And when Rosemary's bartending, she makes a Rosarita, if you know what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
And she also, Rich, here's one of the things she does. She makes martinis with just the right amount of ice shavings floating on the top.
Oh, I love that sheen, you know. Along with partners Brad and Ann Marthens, Eli's features a warm, friendly staff of local island service industry veterans, and they're there and they're going to make sure that your experience is absolutely perfect.
And they've got an extended season, March to November, and then they open back up for New Year's.
Yeah, I've been there for New Year's. It's fun.
Cool.
So, but they don't take reservations, so you will notice, because it's so great, there's a line out the door.
Yeah, I'm going to check the menu first online at elisblockisland.com. Hey, Rich, I feel like I need some exercise. Let's go run the Block Island Triathlon.
I'm more into low impact. How about a gentle paddle?
Oh, sure. Well, we could go explore the Great Salt Pond on a kayak or paddleboard from Ford Island Kayaks.
Yeah, they have the Hobie paddleboards, too. You ever try one of those out? It's like a bike on water.
I've heard about that. They've also got the Peekaboo Glass Bottom Kayak.
Yeah, and you can rent all their stuff by the hour, a half day, full day, or even a whole week. If you're going to stay for a week, you can reserve a kayak for a week.
Yeah, but you know what? You might want to make a reservation if your group is six or more. That's a hot tip for you.
Well, that's a good tip. I like it. So basically, you go explore the Great Salt Pond. It's got hidden coves. There's the oyster farms out there, the marinas. Andy's Way is great, you know?
Yeah, it's super cool. And it's operated by and it's located adjacent to our friends at the BI Fishworks place.
Nice. All right. Well, you can hear everything we just talked about and more if you go to the BIFishworks.com or you can give them a call at 401-466-5392.
You know what my favorite thing to do on a paddleboard is?
What's that?
I like to bring a sandwich with me and paddle out to Andy's Way and just kind of camp out there and eat my sandwich.
It's like finding your own private spot.
I just try to not get sand in my sandwich.
Well, better in your sandwich than your shorts. That's my motto.
Yeah, good point. Hey, Rich, I've got some friends coming into town, and they're looking for a place to stay. Now, my friends are kind of hip and cool. I don't know if they're looking for just like, you know, your everyday typical thing.
Oh, send them to the Darius, man. That place is it's a hip, cool, renovated Victorian gem with an impeccable sense of style.
Oh, my God, you're so right. I love Christy and Becca Zent. Those are the innkeepers, and they've got such a great eye for design.
Yeah, and talk about a location. Prime people watching on those street level decks.
Oh my God, so many shenanigans. But you know what? If you're not into shenanigans, there's some more private rooms that are more hidden away and a little more, you know, kind of if you're looking for something a little more intimate, I guess.
Yeah, and right around the backyard, you almost feel like you're in another world.
Yeah, totally. But it's also, the location is great because you're right near the ferries, shops, restaurants, the beaches. They're all only steps away.
And okay, breakfast. Let's talk awesome breakfast.
Amazing.
Right? Fresh and delicious every morning.
Yeah, I love it. And you know what? It just dawned on me. The story of the Zent sisters and the Darius Inn is on season one, episode 12 of our podcast.
Yeah, they were great guests. A lot of fun.
Totally.
So, hey, listen to the podcast to learn about them or check out their website, DariusBlockIsland.com.
Hey, Rich, do these bell bottoms make me look fat?
Bell bottom. Oh, wait, it must be Monday and you're going to disco night at Captain Nick's.
Well, yeah, of course I'm going to disco night at Captain Nick's. I'm the DJ, man. I got to be there.
That place is so much fun.
So much fun. And the fun doesn't end after Monday, because on Tuesday and Wednesdays, we have dueling pianos followed by Dr. West Chesterton's Sloppy Seconds.
What are Sloppy Seconds?
Well, that's when I play the piano for the rest of the drunk people there at the end of the night.
Oh, that sounds fun in itself. And Thursdays, they've got live acoustic acts and full bands and DJs.
Yeah. And Friday and Saturday afternoons, we have acoustic acts on the deck. Deck at 5:30. Fridays are Delaney, and then Saturdays are buddy Rob Davis.
And then Friday and Saturday nights, they've got the best live bands on Block Island, like Derek and the Fun Bags, the Blushing Brides, Fever, Neil and the Vipers, West End Blend, and the High and Mighty Brass Band, just to name a few.
Yeah, and the bands aren't over just because Friday and Saturday night ends. On Sunday afternoons, the Young Guns take the stage on the Deck at 5:30. If you want to check out the full entertainment schedule, let's just head over to CaptainNicksBI.com. Okay, and we're back with Chuck McMillan. Chuck, tell us more.
So I'm struck by lightning, right, by this music.
Hey, I got a quick question. Sorry, before you go. That song then, did that the same song that went on to become the
Happy Days theme.
Happy Days theme opening song?
Yeah.
That's it. Okay, got so it.
People argue that that is the first, you know, there's debate, but some people say that's the first rock and roll song of all time.
I would even argue that now that I've been in it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's Rocket 88.
Right. That's another one. Yeah.
And if you listen to that Fats Domino thing,
yep.
They do a song called, with the Dave Bartholomew band, called I'm Packing My Suitcase, or Pack My Suitcase. It's rock and roll.
Yeah.
And this was done in the 43, 44.
Wow.
It's rock and roll. It's 12 bar blues, played really hot. Saxophone solo and everything, you know.
Yep.
God bless Clarence Clemons, but there's more than Clarence Clemons, you know.
Certainly.
So, now I've started off doing this thing, and I get to go to see the Alan Freed Rock and Roll Show in Hartford, Connecticut. I'm maybe 16, 15, 16. Then another one in New York City at the, where it played in Manhattan. It also played in Brooklyn Paramount, but I got to see it there. And there you get to see people like Chuck Berry, Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers. It was still doo-wop music, which I still like.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. And then going into the Army, before then I listened to a lot of folk music, which is why I hiked across the country with a guitar on my back. I'm living the Bob Dylan life, you know, and the Jack Kerouac life.
Yeah.
People still think because I have that I'm a hippie. I'm not. I'm a beat. I am. I'm connected deeply to them. And by the time the summer of love happened, and nothing wrong with it, but I was in business school.
You went the other way.
Well, no, becoming an imposter.
Yeah.
So I was an imposter for 30 years or so. You know. It was a secret life because I went to...
Well, that's what advertising is, right? Selling stuff. You just sold yourself.
Well, I'm lucky. I had this ability to be two people. And now, my best friend was... I went and saw Patti Smith when she was just playing with her guitar player at Max's Kansas City.
Yep.
A better one still was. I read in the paper, the Village Voice, there's this guy who's terminally weird playing at CBGB's. His name is David Byrne.
Oh, you went to that?
So, terminally weird, I got to go.
You have my attention.
I have my attention. And I go see this guy, and he walks out with a boombox and starts playing, you know, bum, 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 bum.
Bum, 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 bum.
Maybe I'm doing the wrong one there, but
Psycho Killer.
Yeah, Psycho. Bum 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 dum, bum 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 bum.
Yeah,
bum. And he's playing it. And I'm going, what is going on? And then when another band member comes out, joins them, and they ended up singing Psycho Killer. Blew me apart. Luckily for me, my good friend Bill Shoemaker was the back room manager at CBGB's. I got to go. My wife and I, every night I wanted to go, front row center, to see everything that CBGB's did, including the ill-fated CBGB's theater, music theater, memories come back.
Yeah.
That got closed down on opening night, right after Patti Smith and Bruce Springsteen, who came out, sang Because of the Night. Right. They sang a duet.
Wow.
And then the police chief comes out. We're closing this fucking place down. And everybody almost had a riot. But, and I was sitting right next to Hilly. I didn't know.
Did you know Hilly at all?
I knew him to say hello to him. I wasn't a good friend of his.
Though. Did you know there's a Block Island connection with Hilly? Did you know Jim Stevenson, the illustrator?
Oh, absolutely.
Jim and Hilly were in the Marines together.
I got another one for you. Did you know Alan Freed's last wife used to live on Block Island?
Really?
Yes, over on Dory's Cove Road. She was blind at the time. Second or third house in from West Side Road. My wife learned that one. I said, oh, I want to go over and meet her. This poor old blind lady, you know, poor man. Alan
Did
Freed.
You go?
Yes.
Yeah. Of course. I'm sure she loved having you.
I'm not passing up anything.
Yeah.
You know? Like that.
Take
that,
them out.
That's part of what made my life such an adventure was somebody would say, I'll do that. Which would then lead me into my adventure of sailing around the world, right?
Yeah, what happened
there? Oh, yeah, yeah. So
what made you think this was a good idea?
Well, I read a couple of books. I knew somebody would sail.
I read a couple of books.
Well, he's got the book out pulling into Payne's dock. It says here to turn left a little bit.
So I've got a wonderful collection of nautical books. Remember, I'm a book guy, too.
Yeah.
And I knew somebody that had sailed from South Africa to New York City. I knew somebody had done that, was a friend of mine. And then another good friend of mine had sailed to the Bahamas and was in the Bahamas, done that trip. And so I got it in my head. I finally bought a bigger boat, an older, bigger boat, 36-foot catch. And we saved up money. My wife would canned food, did all that kind of stuff. And off we went from New York City, from Bridgeport, down through, sailed right down the East River, right past.
And this was the beginning of the journey.
Beginning of the journey.
Okay.
All right. So not to give you all the details, because there's a lot of funny stories there, but this would be a 4-hour thing. But nevertheless, finally made it to the Bahamas, right? I'm brown as a berry. I got a beard. I'm sitting on the beach, and I'm getting restless, and I'm thinking, what's wrong? And I realized it. I was bored. I was freaking bored.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was bored. And I thought, oh, no. And I said to my wife, I think I want to go back. She said, okay. We went back. First thing we did in Miami, we went to McDonald's. Had a big Mac. Came back up. I got a job in advertising again. I was already in advertising. I had quit. That 9-month period slowly disappeared from my resume. And then I proceeded on for the next 15 years or so till about 1990, working in advertising as a marketing guy and a strategist, mainly marketing strategy, writing a lot of documents and stuff, but not doing the creative stuff.
I think it's really good that you figured out you were bored before you were in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah.
Because then
you're like, yeah.
Well,
kind of.
Yeah. It would have been worse the Pacific Ocean because you can't, it's hard to turn back.
Good point.
Yeah, it's just going to keep going. But it was a good lesson for me. And it made me understand one part of my life, that I have these grandiose ideas, but you got to be careful, you know, because they can lead me into a lot of trouble.
Yeah, they can get the better of you.
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. So I'm already made it to executive vice president, right?
I'm doing all right.
I'm master of the universe guy, you know, briefcase, haircut, the whole deal, wingtips. I said, I'm never going to be president, right? I'm never going to be president. Because of who I am, it shows up sometimes. Okay, I've had enough of this. I called my wife. Guess what I did today? I quit. God bless her. You know, she's up in the cemetery.
That's nice, dear.
She's up in the cemetery, and I go see her a lot because I owe her a lot, you know. She said, yeah, okay, what are we going to do? I didn't know. I came up here.
There wasn't much room to discuss it because you'd already quit.
Yeah, I did. I just said enough, you know. And I came up here for a month, spent a month up here, just trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I decided I was going to go back to school and get a bigger degree. So I went back to school, got a master's and a PhD in business and marketing and stuff. And then proceeded my next career, which was teaching at a local university, Hofstra University. Well, I taught at City University, then I taught at Penn State for a couple of years. But Penn State, you're equally distant from every place else in the world. I'm getting bored, you know? So I came back so I could live my double life, which is teach at a local university, have a great life. And any young people listening, look me up on Rate Your Professor. I get great grades. You know? they love me. But
I bet.
But then I was able to lead this sort of double life, you know? One, I was going to every concert you could possibly believe. I would get free tickets. Here's one. Of the top five concerts I ever went to, one of my clients had the Palladium. They sponsored the Palladium. This guy didn't like music, so he gives me four tickets. He says, "You want to see this guy, Bruce Springsteen?"
He's going places.
Sixth row center. 5 hours, blood dripping off his hands. He finishes with the James Brown ending, you know, falling on the ground. I'm stoned out of my head, taking hundreds of, I have a wonderful collection of slides because I was a good photographer, taking 1,000 pictures. And for people who don't know what the James Bond, Brown ending is, he collapses. Clarence comes over, picks him up, brings him back. He sings a song, collapses again. They take him. Yeah. The nurses come out. Yeah. The whole thing. I was destroyed. I just lay in there. Amazing. Oh, my God.
It's amazing.
Oh, my God. Wow. That's the kind of life I was leading. Plus, I was Mr. McMillan in the corner office also.
I love this about
you.
Yeah,
this is perfect.
You so casually just are like, oh, well, then I was a professor at Hofstra, and then I was a vice president over here, and then I was, you know.
But that was part of it, just that I don't know, maybe it's my secret life, you know, that, except my kids know the whole story, and my good friends do too, but.
I had no idea.
Yeah. And so then I taught at Hofstra. And I had a good time there. I published a lot of papers and did a lot of stuff, you know, academic stuff. But eventually that was enough for me. By then, to bring it back to Block Island, we could talk about Block Island a little bit. I was getting the summers off. My wife, I was a Friday night daddy. And the only real exciting Friday night daddy thing, one Friday coming over here, a day far worse than it is today, pea soup fog. We're leaving on the small ferries, either the Manistee or the Manitou. And a guy opens up the door to that little cabin that you sit in, maybe holds 30 people.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We're going to get hit. They're going to hit us. They're going to hit us. I'm going, oh, shit. What, you know? So and here I am, suit and a tie.
Nobody move. I'm an explosives expert.
That's behind me now. Yeah. Although I almost did. And I still pay attention to it, you know? I'm a nerd that way. And
you're a pretty cool nerd.
Yeah, you're the coolest nerd I know.
And I go outside. I realize first, we're in the channel. We haven't left. We're out of the docks, but it's a fishing boat coming this way. So I figure if we sink, you know, I can walk the shore.
Short swim.
In fact, the boat, it'll hit bottom, but I'll just stay up on the upper deck. And out of the fog comes this fishing boat, drunk. They're all drunk, and they're laughing.
What?
Boom, boom, boom. They bang off the side of them. They're laughing. We have to turn around, go back, because you have to wait for the Coast Guard to come. The only bottom line of that, they moved us to a bigger ferry that was the next one out, opened up the bar. Ah. So everybody was happy. You know, so that was my Friday night daddy story. But then I became coming up here summers. And that's when the craziness for Block Island, besides the love that we had, you know, of just this secret place that we knew. But our kids by then were about 12 years old. So they were like Miles Willie, who was here. By the way, I hope to God I live long enough to see what he grows up to be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Yeah.
Oh, you bet. I love that.
I want to see Miles after he pushes his dad in the volcano.
Yeah, that's going to be.
Pretty good kid and great to listen to.
Yeah, yeah.
A 12-year-old kid talk about all these dreams he has.
I loved it. Yeah.
It was wonderful. But so that's where my kids were here. And I would just, they wanted to go out. Yeah, be home by 12, 11, whatever. They'd go out from the west side. They'd make their way downtown. They made a group of friends that they're still friendly with today. And including that, they said, you got to meet these other people. They live up on Calico Hill. And it's the Coreys and the Sears. And they live up there. And so then proceeded this raucous time where we got involved with Ed McGovern and that whole crew with the Yellow Kittens going to the parties. And now there's a Halloween party coming up. I don't think I'll go to this one, but we used to go to some pretty raucous ones.
Up on Calico Hill?
No, at the Yellow Kittens.
Oh, the Kittens, yeah.
At the Kittens, that Halloween party. Up on Calico Hill, we would have parties up there all the time. In fact, that's where I learned about a luge. And I said, a luge? I didn't know what the hell that was. And they had some guy came, big two blocks of ice, cut the hole, you know. Of course, first time I was lapping up that vodka coming down the stuff, and my tongue got stuck. You know?
Yeah, how did he lose his tongue in a bizarre ice luge accident?
You had to pour more vodka on top to get loose.
Yeah, survived Korea.
But unfortunately.
So that's the kind of life I was leading up here. But eventually, I got involved with Adrian's Army, of which I've been doing for 20 years or so. Got involved with the Block Island Times. I walked into their office when it was downtown and told Shirley, who was then, Shirley was his first wife, I wanted to write for the paper.
And this is when Peter Wood owned it?
Peter, and it was Peter. Married to Shirley.
Yeah, okay.
It's his first wife.
Yep.
And the one who died, yeah. And she said, yeah, give it a try. So I wrote an article. She just ripped the crap out of it, you know? So I was limping as I walked away. But I kept at it. And eventually...
That was just a test.
Yeah. Eventually, when Peter was out on Old Mill Road running the paper from the basement, and we lived close by, we used to just walk over there. I walked over and I said to him, I'd like to write some stuff for you. And so he gave me a couple of things to think about, of which I would write. This is early on. I would write the essay, take the pictures and write an essay. I was his photographer for 2 years before I then decided to go back to school and become a university professor. It started in one and ended. All the time I was doing the advertising and becoming a university, I was also coming up here all the time and doing that. So I wrote a couple of stories. The one I remember the most was one that shows up to this day called something to the effect of searching for the ghosts of the Palatine graves, right? And the ghost people out here used that article.
Is that right?
And my son said to me, you know, did you write an article? I said, yeah, about 20 years ago I wrote that thing. And there was that time. Then I went back to school. I couldn't do it. I gave the photography job to my wife, who was a photographer. And then she became the photographer for the Block Island Times for years, taking all the pictures.
And I'm sorry, what was your wife's name?
Toby. T-O-B-E-E. Oh. Yeah. Young people don't know about everybody else my age or 20 years younger.
Yeah, I know her.
Yeah. Yep. You would have known.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, a wonderful lady. That in the end, she had a disease that took a long time to come out completely.
Yeah.
But we knew what it was, and we knew what the end game was going to be, which it happened 2 years ago, and it taught me a really big lesson about life, and made me sit back and think a lot about what was going on in my own life and stuff. And although I was involved with stuff, I then thought, well, do the things you love, right? That's the real end game for any, for actually, it's the life game for what people do.
Yeah.
I never have a problem. A guy who wants to be a musician, my son Charles, he'll hate me for this. He's pre-med student, takes the MCAS, does well, calls me up from Boston. He went to Boston University, I think. Dad, I want to take a year off. Well, good. You've worked hard. What do you want to do? Well, I'm in this band. 9 years later, Dad, I think I want to be a lawyer. 9 years he did. Played at CBGB's, played at the grocery, Alice's grocery store, whatever that place
Arlene's,
was. Arlene's grocery store. I've been to that place, too. And he loves me to this day because I didn't stop him. I said, you go do what you want to do.
Yeah. It's really funny because I met your son, Charles. He was one of the first people, because he was part of the Juice and Java scene when Michael Shields owned it in the mid-90s.
Absolutely.
And that had a very beat, you know, kind of vibe to it. Michael was into all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so this is why it's so fascinating talking to you, because now looking back at Charles, whom I only knew for a few summers. Yeah. I still, every time, I see him bump into him once in a while. And I actually bumped into him in Park Slope when I lived there for a very short period of time. I'd see him around there. But this all tracks, as they say, because like I can see where, you know.
And it's I just consider myself a lucky boy in many ways, because I've done all this stuff. I wanted to have, at first I didn't want to have children. You know, I was a zero population guy. But then I said to Toby, let's have one. We got dealt identical twin boys, which turns out to be the best thing ever, you know.
And they're both jumping back and forth in the time a little bit. They're both alumni. Are they both alumni of Finn's?
No.
No? Just no. One of them was, right?
Yeah, Charles was the barista there, you know. And then ended up being a barista in Manhattan, too, for a while, knowing some kids that were out here that also lived in New York. And then he decided he wanted to do something, you know. So he's a lawyer now. So the other one's a New York City fireman. And I'm still trying to figure that out, identical twin sons. That son, Edward, his first job here was he got a job at the National, right? And it says something about people and what they do. He got a job there. They dressed him up in a uniform. Like, remember little Johnny from the cigarettes call for Philip Morris, right? With a little cap on, you know?
Like the bellhop style.
Like a bellhop. He worked a half a day.
He's like...
went into the bathroom, tore the clothes off, threw them in the bathroom, went home. Never came back as my boy Edward. So I'm proud of both of them for different things, you know. And today they're very close together, although one's a lawyer, one's a New York City fireman.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff.
Wow. And one of them married, I met her, I should remember her name, the hydrologist.
Yeah, Phoebe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Phoebe is now on the, she might be an interesting person.
Oh, I've already thought about that.
Yeah.
And she knows...
she's a hydrogeologist. And she now is I suggested it to her, but it's the right place to be. She's on the Sewer and Water Commission.
Yeah.
Just getting her...
Go ahead. I know what you're going to say. Say it.
Getting her feet wet.
Well, at least it's not a melon joke.
God almighty.
You know that Chuck's smart because he catches himself before he drops a bad pun.
Yep.
You know, that's a mark of a genius.
And so to tell you where I am today, and then please, more, if you want to talk about anything, I'll talk about anything. But I'm back to being a writer again. It's what I wanted to do when I was growing up. I hated my father because I wanted to be an archaeologist, and he said, no, you got to get a job. Then I was going to go be an art major. No, you're going to be an engineering major. And we settled for industrial design, which I got finally kicked out of. And then I got to be about 40 years old. And I realized, here's a guy, my father, who had to quit high school because of the Depression. Just when the Depression ends, what happens? World War II. So he never got to do all the stuff. He had to just work his ass off. Then he got divorced. My mother, I was a latchkey kid before they had latchkey kids. And those two people worked their ass off. But it took me the longest time to get it, you know?
That generation actually is what enabled the next generation to start to be more like you and be able to do the things you want to do rather than...
Absolutely. I went to his grave, poured a shot of whiskey in the grave, you know, and toasted him right there and said, boy, did I really fuck it up with you. You died too young and I never got to really talk to you man to man.
Before I got it.
And so anytime now I see anybody who's estranged from another person, their parents, I go right after them. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now I'm doing Adrian's Army. I did it this Wednesday. It turns out with I'm at the bar at Kimberly's last night, Hannah's husband works for the Nature Conservancy.
Yeah, doing Adrian's.
He's the guy Rob that I talk to all the time. Never knew Rob's last name.
Oh, you didn't know Hannah and Rob were married.
I didn't know.
Well, Rob is his last name. His first name's Magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, jokingly.
Oh, yes. That's right. Yeah. She said they, in fact, Toby.
Everybody calls him Magic Rob.
Toby used to take pictures of him because he would show up at little kids' parties and stuff and do all the magic tricks. Yeah.
He's really good.
Yeah, he was. Very good. But I never put the two together.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm on the senior advisory committee. So I got a little juice, not much, but I put my 2 cents worth in. It's a remarkable group of people trying to do things. You know, 1/3 of the population here is over 60, are seniors.
Yeah.
Older
people. I was wondering what the percentage was. I think you would know.
About a third. If you look at this latest census, that's what it is. And more people are figuring it out. This is a place to live and retire and stay here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the winter community is growing. I went to Florida on that trip around the world. That was enough for me. I'm not a Florida guy.
Yeah.
We both planned to stay here, and I don't know what we would do. So I'm on the senior advisory committee, and then on a whim, I see this little thing in the paper or somewhere about ukulele. Now, I had stopped playing the guitar, but I could, you know, I could still do a little bit, 3 or 4 chords, you know, easy ones.
That's all you need.
Oh, there were times I used to heavy and snort coke and just play. I was really good listening to myself.
Yeah.
But so
I'm loving your transparency.
This is amazing.
You can just tell that you've done it all, and you don't. At this point, who cares what happened?
Here's what I figured out. It took a while. Present yourself as who you are.
Yeah.
If people like it, great. They don't like it, that's great too. You know. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There are people who think I'm an asshole, and I know that.
Are there?
Well, I am sometimes.
You know? Well, everybody is sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. Some people don't know.
I don't think anybody's walking around pointing at you, going, "Look at that asshole."
Oh no.
But you know,
I know what you mean.
Well, after this podcast,
please.
Oh, love it.
So I see this thing in the paper about ukuleles. Ukuleles. And so I say, okay, I'll give it a shot, and I love it. And it's really just about having fun. Of course, like me. Down the rabbit hole I go. I'm now playing a baritone ukulele. I've electrified. I'm now trying to learn songs like Girl from Ipanema.
Ooh.
You know?
There's some jazzy chords in that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful stuff, but my hand isn't ready for it yet, but I'm working on it.
Cool.
And one of the things I discovered about life in general is pick some hard things to do, you know?
Yeah.
Because then you learn... The easy things that were a little difficult to do become really easy to do. That's what's happened to me. And now I actually appear with them a little bit. I was with Tunes on the Dunes every Monday night in the summer. A little plug for that. And a lot of people come, and we all...
Where and what is that?
Yeah, tell us about that.
I've heard of this.
Tunes on the Dunes, we have a screen. It's an extension of the Block Island Ukulele Society, which is about 20 of us who play the ukulele, trying to play.
Yeah. I mean,
none of us are masters at it. We're all learning. And Jamie Hennessy got permission from the town to every Monday night, or every other Monday night, I think. We put up a big screen on the pavilion. She projects songs up, and we all sit there, and we can see the song and with the chords to do it, and we all sing the songs. Easy ones like Buffalo Gals.
Yeah, yeah.
To more important ones, ones that actually everybody loves are This Land, Woody Guthrie's This Land Is Your Land, and Take Me Home, Country Road, songs like that that are singable songs that are just wonderful. And I think it's great. I think it's almost a cultural moment for Block Island, that here's another thing that's going to go into the history of the cultural history of Block Island, which you guys are doing. You know, no history book has the stuff you have in it. Ben Horeska, who's a really good historian, writes historical articles. It's not about Chuck McMillan getting drunk someplace.
And snorting coke.
Not up here. I don't know. I ended that quickly.
Yeah, good. Bad stuff.
I ended it quickly in an airport in Cincinnati. with a nosebleed.
Gotcha. You were like,
and I forgot my Bible.
Yeah. I didn't have a Bible on me to get out of.
Enough of that. Luckily, the guy who was with me, an art director guy, goes, "Chuck, you're bleeding." I went, "Oh,
must be
really?
The altitude."
Yeah. Must be that. That was the end of that.
Gotcha.
Coke is a fool's dream.
Bad stuff.
Yeah. It's a fool's dream.
Never seen a winner on that.
No.
Never.
Nope. First time is the wonderful, you're Superman. Second one, you're looking for the first one.
Yeah.
Fifth one, you're looking for the fourth one. You know, it's a bad place to go.
I like Bill Cosby's bit about it, where he says, he asked his friend, he's like, why do you like cocaine so much? He goes, well, it intensifies your personality. He goes, yeah, but what if you're an asshole?
Oh, yeah. I've seen some bad people do stupid things on that stuff.
Yeah.
So anyway. It's pretty bad.
So where were we?
I don't remember. I got lost in the bathroom in Cincinnati.
I was at the Ukulele Society.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Talking about us and capturing, Chuck McMillan.
I think this is an important thing that you guys are doing.
Thank you.
You know, I didn't ask to come on this, but I was honored.
Well, we're glad you took the time to do it. I find you interesting. There's people that I've seen and waved hi to, and I know your hat from a mile away when you're walking down the road and your feather sticking out of your hat.
Yeah, I had somebody last night say that to me.
Yeah,
the guy walking down the road.
Yeah, and we say hi or always in passing, but it, for me, here's someone I've said hi to for 30, 40 years, and, you know, I'm just learning now about you.
Here's what I learned, how that happened. My wife was getting sicker and sicker, and I didn't have anything. I was with Peter Greenman. I don't know if you knew him.
Yeah, yeah.
He's now deceased. But we were doing something, and he started singing Hallelujah, the song Hallelujah. And I harmonized with him at the end, and I thought, oh, isn't that nice? So I looked it up, and I listened to podcasts, and I listened to music all the time on my machine, wherever it is in my pocket. Forgot to turn it off, by the way.
Well, it's yours. It's okay.
I started listening to the Leonard Cohen version of that.
Yeah, he wrote that one.
Yes.
Yeah.
With about 87 verses,
yes,
if you really look into it.
There's a good documentary on that, too.
Yes, I watched it.
Okay, that's it.
I watched it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I started singing that, you know, and I felt good. And I started to sing it while I was walking, because my wife, Heather Leroy, the caregiver, the angel of Block Island, came early in the morning. I'd go for a walk. Because that was part of my problem when getting out of the house. I was really up towards the end of her life. And I waved to her. I would be happy. I would be out in the middle of West Side Road going, you know, singing Hallelujah out loud to myself. But I would wave to people, and they waved back. And I realized I felt good. I felt good. Then I realized other people feel good.
Yeah.
And I thought, isn't that nice? All I got to do is go, hi. And so even the ones that don't get out of the way, you know, try and clip me a little bit. I still wave at them. I don't say thank you. If you look at me closely and you see my lips move, I'm saying thank you to the people that move outside for me. But it turned out to be just that thing. And then suddenly people in the bar would say, oh yeah, you're the guy with the hat. And my marketing then kicked in. You know, I thought, uh-oh, I got a brand identity here now. So I still wear it. In fact, for the Tunes on the Dunes, I wear it. And it's worked out kind of nice.
What type of hat is that called? It's
a Bahama hat?
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure.
It's like a round brim.
Yeah, it's not like a hipster hat.
No.
It's not one of those, although I have one from my father-in-law that's an original one.
Really?
And I put it on recently. I thought I might wear it when I go play music sometime, but it sort of sits on top of my head. I got a bigger head. Yeah, I know I got a big head.
You mean a large melon? Yes. You got a large melon?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, when I was studying for my PhD, I started to have this dream that my head was growing and growing and going to explode. Just God's honest truth. You're putting in so much forgetting everything else. And this, and I kept going, oh, no. It never happened, thank God. Although I've blown my mind a number of times.
Yeah, the Owsley, I'm pretty sure.
I did. Maybe I'd put in a word for, well, I better not. I was going to say for mushrooms. I'll tell you what mushrooms did for me. I stopped smoking marijuana for 30 years, you know. I smoke it. In fact, I haven't smoked in a month, but I'll probably do it again. But I was a serious smoker and doing that, all that other stuff. I grew my own mushrooms, psilocybin mushrooms, took a real good dose, and lay on the couch like that one over there for at least 4 hours, staring at, I have this magnificent, very famous photograph, large photograph of Marilyn Monroe. She was talking back to me a little bit. but it was more, you learn, be careful about psilocybin, though. They're now using it in research. You know?
Yeah.
And it's becoming almost legalized in places.
Yep.
For me, I was able to pull back a lot of layers and really understand who I was and who I am. I'm one of those guys, you know. I want to know why we're here on Earth, and the Jesus thing isn't enough for me, you know. So I respect the people that do it, and I socialize with a lot of people.
Well, everybody wants answers.
But that was it. And to this day, I'm sort of looking for that answer. But this thing got me into a really deep Chuck thing. We deep down inside, who, you know, what's the acorn in the middle there? And I sort of got that, you know, and it helped me. Within 2 weeks, I'd stopped smoking marijuana, went on to build a house out here. I didn't think I could build a house being a couch potato. Got my PhD.
Oh, yeah, you got nothing done in life.
Yeah. You got a
PhD out of it, did that whole thing. And then only when my wife got really sick about 5 years ago, my buddy goes, do you want a hit? Sitting next to him. And I said, yeah. He fell off. I blew his mind because I took a hit. Since then, I've smoked not a lot, but I not like I used to. But I still like it at night, going to sleep when I'm home. I don't drive with it. I know that's a fool's mistake. The most famous story is on 9th Street in Brooklyn, I stop at the red light. Everybody in the car is loaded and laughing. And I say, what are you laughing at? They told me, you're at least a half a block from the red light.
But I said, that's okay as long as you're before it.
Yeah. I said, I stopped. But that was enough. That told me. And if you've ever watched, they used to be on YouTube. There was Bon Appetit, which is a good one. And the one who does all the chemical stuff. He's a chemist who goes into all that stuff.
Okay.
I can't remember the name. It'll come to me someday. And he did a test with a car. And there's no question in my mind that your reflexes are there, but they're a lot slower.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
So you don't want to get hit by a deer out here. I'll bet you a number of the deer that have ended their life out here it's been cannabis involved in it.
Somewhere. Oh yeah, or booze.
Yeah. And it's a fool's errand.
Yeah.
I don't drink and drive, but I stopped drinking too recently.
Yeah.
And now I just have a glass of wine at dinner.
Yeah.
Although I look forward to getting back into it a little bit.
Well, it's interesting the whole history of cannabis and psychedelics, any drug really, why the government, criminalized all of it.
Yep.
And there's plenty of documentaries about that too, but they don't want
and
expanded
for me there's
minds.
A real split. Yeah. I have no interest in speed and whack, crack is whack and all that stuff. No interest in that.
Right, no.
But things if you've read The Doors of Perception, or you know about that kind of stuff, you understand that it's if you're careful.
Well, that's a tough thing about psychedelics. Yeah. It can be a very introspective journey, but there are a lot of people who don't, once they, they do it and they start looking in, they don't like what they see. And
terrified of their
terrified of their
I probably attribute it to my parents. They put somebody really nice way in the bottom here.
Yeah.
And through all the shit that you get in life,
life will heap a lot on you.
We all have it.
Yeah.
I know that. It's how you react to that and how you live through all that and how you deal with it.
Yeah.
And
We don't have to go deep down that rabbit hole, but I mean, mushrooms and things in the natural family, they've been around for thousands of years and people have used them to find that acorn, and to live a fantastic life with nature and understand. Yeah. And I'm not going to say everybody should go out and do it. You know what I mean?
But
there is definitely a medicinal, it is not a myth. It's absolutely, I would say, mushrooms in a mild dose are absolutely Mother Nature's antidepressant and anti-anxiety.
I've been reading about microdoses. I don't do them. I haven't done one.
What are you doing tomorrow?
But
looks like I am staying overnight tonight.
But it looks like the research and the science of it, because I got a PhD. I'm a science guy.
Yeah.
I don't buy into I'm a critical thinker. And it's slowly going in that direction. They need more research. Maybe they can figure out why some people it's good for, some people it's not good for. And that's why I'd always be hesitant to tell anybody to do what I've done.
But the government a while back shut it all down. They didn't want it being studied. They didn't want it to. And they don't want open minds. They don't want conscious people.
Not only giving LSD to military people.
MKUltra, all that. Yeah, right, exactly.
I know those stories.
Well, to bring it back to Block Island, too, another great thing, and not that we're going to try and, market Block Island as a destination to come to do psychedelics, but let's face it, it's a pretty good place to, if you're going to, go down on that journey to do that. The scenery and everything. And
absolutely.
Like, and then, nature.
The more calming and calm and together you are, the better off it becomes.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually, because I've done those things, when I was told you at the beginning of this thing, I sat in front of this 4 or 5 or 10, 20 acres of goldenrod. I was just stunned by the beauty of a weed.
Yeah.
Not the weed.
No, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean.
A weed. Yeah. Yeah. I said the weed for in parentheses.
Yeah, yeah. He's one pun ahead of us.
I would have sat down in that field too, but I would have had an instant asthma attack and passed out.
Well, I take medicine for that. Uh-huh. I do that. But I'm an asthmatic. Too.
The same thing happened to me in that field of lilies up on in the maze. You know where the maze?
Oh yeah, sure.
The maze, right? The lilies. Yeah. That field. I remember the first time I came upon that was just like, what is this?
Yes.
Lilies or daffodils?
Sorry, daffodils.
Daffodils. Yeah, okay. Sorry. Now I know what you're talking about. I'm when did I miss the lilies?
You know the ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
So one more.
Same family.
One
same
more
family.
Short Block Island story about daffodil. Daffodils, I think. When Tracy Fish was talking about, she made lemonade out of,
dandelion
wines. Toby and I decided we're going to make dandelion wine. If you read, there's a great book called Stalking the Wild Asparagus by Yul Gibbon. It's been out for 50 years almost. All he does is talk about natural stuff that you can eat. I'm working on Persephone, by the way. I bought her a copy of it because she's interested in this stuff. And a good friend of mine, Pete King, and I go down to Persephone's all summer. But Toby and I get the idea, we're going to make dandelion wine. Collect the dandelions. We make it the first year. Terrific. Really good stuff. Nice tasting, a little oily, but a nice taste to it. You don't get it, it depends on how long you leave the yeast in. You make it, you can get a little bang out of it, but very nice. Just with water and toast and yeast and dandelions, I think. Maybe there's something else there. Second year we make it, it's pretty good. I'm giving people shots of it. When they come to dinner, we all have a shot of dandelion wine. Third year she makes it. You have to cork it, but when you first cork it, you're supposed to cork it with cotton because it needs to breathe. She corks it with cork.
Oh.
The middle of the night, boom, just like the U.S. Naval propeller plane. I jump out of bed. What the hell?
Yep. You didn't find anyone's eyeball on the lawn, though.
No, but the kitchen took a long time to clean up.
I did it with beer. Making my own homemade beer, because the sugar in the beginning of the beer is to ferment, and then at the very end, you put a teeny bit of sugar in to carbonate. That's what...
We probably put some sugar in there, too.
And that's what did it to me. I capped them on this, but they were little 12-ounce bottles, so you start to hear pop, 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 pop. Like they all...
And you're decided, ducking. It sounds like an AK.
Yeah, now by the third pop, I knew what it was. I was like, oh, no, it's not going to stop.
Yeah,
there's six cases
they're all
in there.
Go.
Here's a lesson for everybody. Learn from your mistakes.
Yeah.
I'm listening to a thing on Freakonomics right now about failure. And the greatest things in the world come out of people that fail all the time and accept it and just say, okay, I failed this time. Let me try it again. Do it a little bit differently. And that's how we both learned. I haven't made any dandelion wine, although I think about it now and then, you know, in honor of Toby. Maybe I'll make some more and get a little whacked out one night.
Why not?
At the cemetery.
Yeah.
I'll pour a glass on her grave.
There you go.
Do you find that, for me, I go down, I see something new that I want to learn about or try, and I read. And like you said, it's great. Try something difficult, and hence the failure. Because if nobody ever fails, it's because you're doing stuff that's too easy. But, you know, I'll do it, and I'll sort of get it, and I'll be done with it. And then I have to find something new to try. Because if I stop learning, I get a little bored.
It's a little ADD.
Yes, I say that all the time.
I have it, and I think I've harnessed it correctly.
Yeah, you know, I say that all the time because I agree.
I'm insanely curious. I can't tell you the books I read because it's just everything from Queen Mary, Queen of Scots, to something about bugs, you know, or geology, because I now have a daughter-in-law who's a geologist. So every time I got a rock, I talked to her driver crazy with, oh, look at this one. What do you think this is, you know? And it's good. And there's a wonderful book, as we know, on the geology of Block Island, too. Yep. But so, yeah, I am that.
Yeah. I like to, like I said, I'll brew it. You make the mistake. Then you get it down. Then you get it really good. And then I got to find something new. And,
I think I've tried it with a number of different things like that.
I did.
This is okay because I go down the wormhole. I immediately am going to be an expert, even though I'm not.
This is my only problem with Amazon. I now have to give myself a definite 7 days to think about something because I'll go right on and say, oh, I want to learn how to do this. I order the books, whatever you need to do it. And then I find it's, but only about half of it interests me when I actually get it.
And here's another piece not to do with Amazon. Don't have a couple of drinks at night and lay in bed.
Oh, yeah. Or eBay.
eBay.
That's dangerous.
No, eBay is me.
Oh, yeah.
I've started two or three new collections I never thought I would start.
Exactly.
Here's the story. I had this Deadeye Dicks ashtray, and when I was smoking marijuana, I loved it. I had Deadeye Dicks ashtray that I could flick, just for me, no one else. One night I had a martini and a joint, and I dropped it and broke it.
Oh!
And I had bought it on eBay for $10.
Yeah.
I have since then. That's like 4 years ago. Every night I go on eBay. Look under Block Island Ashtrays, just in case. And in the meantime, I've then started a small collection of ashtrays.
Yep.
These ruby red ones, and there's cut glass ones. They're just beautiful. And it's an affordable affliction. You know?
Yeah. I collect a few things, matchbook covers and, you know.
Sometimes. Matchbox cars.
Yeah. Hot Wheels.
I have, and thank God I have a garage and a solar. And sometime I'll invite you over and show you.
I was going to say, I need to see this music collection you have.
Yeah, sure.
At some point, I'd love to.
Yeah. He'd love your collection. You know, Mark has a collection of, I never remember what to call them.
Oh, the Carnival Prize Mirrors.
The Carnival Prize Mirrors.
Do you remember in the 70s and 80s, you go to the Midway and, you know, you'd pop balloons. And remember the mirrors with like rock bands on them? Oh. I've got like 250, 300 of them.
God, yeah. Thank God I didn't think of that. I've seen those.
Yeah.
I have this huge, because I used to travel a lot. I'd go into every airport and buy an ashtray and the little cheap tin ones with the town in it.
Yeah.
I've got boxes of them. I just put them away. I get obsessed like that.
I do too, yeah. You know? I have a little problem with collecting things.
No, it's fine. My house is full of it.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky. If you're ever back in Park Slope, I have to downsize. I'm giving my apartment there to my son.
Uh-huh.
And so I have all this other stuff. I'm trying to get through my book collection and only get up here. I don't know what to do yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The original deal was I was going to die, be buried in a dumpster, and everything was just thrown in. I take it all with me.
Yeah, yeah. I'm starting to get this feeling every now and then. I just turned 50 a little while ago, and I'm starting to get this feeling like I have too much stuff. Like I'm getting buried under stuff.
I never had got... Well, see, you live a slightly different life. Yeah. I mean, I've got a house with a garage.
Yeah.
And a garage is the greatest thing in the world. And a garage with no telephone in it.
Ooh.
Although I carry it in there sometimes.
You know? Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that you have to deal with. When you get to be, you're starting, you're not in the end game yet, but you're starting to get, you're 50.
Oh, believe me, I'm well aware. You know. I'm looking at the end game.
Yeah,
I'm like, too. I've bought the instruction manual.
Well, God save you. You end up like me. I'm 80.
I can only hope.
I'm 84.
You're a cool dude, man.
Here's what's crazy. I think this is going to screw it up for sure. I think I got a shot at 100.
I think you do.
I'd say you have a very good chance.
Let's be good. My metabolic numbers yesterday, perfect.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I'll say it to people who know, my A1C was 6.5. They almost declared me not type 2 diabetic, but I'm type 2 diabetic.
Me too, but I don't ever see a 6.5.
Well, you got to do like I did. You know, change your life. I changed my behavior.
Oh, I thought you were talking about LSD.
Well, that one. Well, psilocybin.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to change my behavior. It's hard.
No shit. Yeah. It's really hard.
Yep.
And you know what I use? I didn't get into this. A little extra plug. I do Tai Chi. Now, I tried Tai Chi. I was teaching at Penn State for about a couple of years. And I've always been attracted to Zen stuff and Zen Buddhism and out of that beat generation stuff. And I did Tai Chi there, didn't do it well. Did Tai Chi in New York, didn't well. Tom Hogan up here brought in Tai Chi. My wife was really sick, about to die. I said, I think I'm really going to do it this time. And I stuck with it. And so I do Tai Chi. And I looked at Tai Chi as a way to get control of yourself. Because I felt like you did a bit. I just can't get through this. I wanted to stop doing this and stop eating the arugula when they have it at the BEIG. And I go back and buy a Dunkin' Donuts and I'm you know,
yeah.
I'm eating one of those.
Sugar stuff is just as addictive as heroin.
Awful. Oh, yeah. It's awful
and
stuff.
And now they have a newest thing where they put a munchkin on top of the whipped cream, on top of the syrupy coffee.
I know.
It's like, how many more things can you stack up on
I
there?
Know. I listen Delta. To it and I go, oh, my God.
It's our old pumpkin spice with an extra 300 calories.
But it was Tai Chi every Wednesday afternoon that I do that suddenly taught, I do it every day, but taught me this thing that, yeah, you can control your physical body. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
And so I would say to anybody, if you can't do it, think about some other way to get control of stuff and do Tai Chi or any of those.
Yeah. So my grandmother is 107 and she did Tai Chi up until she's not mobile anymore, but she was
I hope
in her later years.
I hope at 107, I can't be mobile.
Yeah, and, I mean, you know, it's a mixed bag. The
is she by any chance from Sardinia?
Sicily. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a thing called the Blue Zones.
I've been watching that as
and
well.
And one of them is Sardinia.
Yeah. I saw that one.
Now, anybody who came from a mountain town in Italy, you know, Sicily being a lot of them.
Yep.
Not all of them. You could come from the towns too, but anywhere where they correlate the steepness of the hills with the life expectancy, you're going to see that.
Yeah, your life is one giant stairmaster.
And they do. I mean, I use olive oil. I grew up with a ton of Italians. So anytime you want to swear in Italian, I could swear. The Bridgeport I grew up was not a homogenous place. A lot of Irish Catholics, but also Hungarians, Polish, Italian, Germans. It was a mix because it was an industrial town, and everybody who needed a job right around the end of World War I, that's when where I lived in a project.
Yeah.
But it was a decent project built for workers. It's still there. It's now in the National Historic Record, a place called Seaside Village. The project right next door, they've torn down because it didn't work. This one, they finally sold it to the people. My mother bought it. When I was already, in fact, I bought it for her, but and it's still there and pretty nice, right near the ocean, which is where my connection with boats come from. Anyway,
wow,
that whole thing,
yeah,
a different story.
Yeah,
so many stories. I thank you so much for sharing all of them with us.
Yeah. These are all the clean ones.
That's good. Yeah. We should do another podcast with you where we get the unclean ones.
When you don't record.
Yeah.
We should record one that we just scheduled to drop right after your 105th birthday. You know, the one, then it can come out.
or we take mushrooms and do one.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
you do it. Look at it. I'll do it. I don't mind if this stuff comes out as is.
Yeah.
I know I'll get a little pushback from some people.
Oh, well.
Oh, I don't think so.
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think so.
You'll be amazed. But like people, you know. Generally.
Well, it's out here. If they're real Block Island people, they don't give a shit.
Exactly. Yeah. And I like something you said earlier. You just be you. Be yourself. And if people like it, fine. If they don't, that's fine, too. You know, it takes a long time, I think, for some people to get to that point where they're not in their heads about what other people are going to think about
them.
Because then you don't express yourself. And if you don't express yourself, you don't connect with people.
Of course.
It's important. But so I love that about you.
Yeah.
And I think that's the trait. I just had this conversation on the boat the other day with someone, and I said, you know, you look into someone's eyes and you can almost immediately see a genuine person over the person I'm talking to here is not,
Yeah, but I tried to give you that little acorn that's inside there. That's the real Chuck.
Oh, yeah. I think you have.
Actually, it's the real Charlie McMillan, you know.
I still love the dual life, like the.
I do too.
Yeah. It works pretty well.
And to bring it all back home too, ever since that trip to Block Island, it seems that was always on your mind, and it was something you kept working towards.
Yeah.
Toby and I figured that out early on.
Yeah.
This is the place.
Yeah.
You know?
And you had told me a story once about, didn't you come across on one of your early times like an actor?
I'm trying to think of his name. It'll come to me as we talk.
Sterling Hayden? We talked about this.
Yeah, we did.
And early on in our trips here, we're walking around and down the road, comes this guy looking like Moses, at least 6'12" or high, a huge guy, big beard, flowing robes, this wonderful staff, and this little coterie behind him of various people, hangers-on and friends, because he was a big sailor, too, by the way. Wonderful books he wrote, two of them, which I have copies of. And I went, Sterling Hayden, what the hell is he doing here? Just walking down right over by the American Legion. I could spot, you know? And I thought, holy crap. You know, so now when who was here? The actress Gillibrand was here a couple of weeks ago. She was here. You know, I'm pronouncing her name wrong, forgive me. She has I'm 84. Who's
forgiven.
Whose brother is Gillibrand too.
Oh, Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal.
I saw them. She and her husband. They were at the Surf having dinner behind us.
Yeah,
Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, Maggie.
Yeah.
They were at Persephone's, and we chatted with them. They wanted to know a good place to go swimming where they wouldn't get bothered too much. So we gave them a spot. I was a little concerned about giving away one of the secret spots.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and we have what's his name out on Mohegan Bluffs or Coonamus Road. The other actor, the one dancing.
Oh, Chris Walken.
Chris Walken.
Yeah.
I've seen him a number of times here. It's a kid from Queens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
all he is. Yeah.
I've talked to him a couple of times.
And I've known a couple of actors, including very famous actors. So I've interfaced with famous actors. And at the bottom of them, some of them are full of themselves, but a lot of them are just like us.
Sure.
You know? Yeah.
Except they wanted to be an actor. Look at...
it's a job.
Look at Molly Price.
Oh, my God.
I talked to her all
She's
the time.
She's amazing.
You know, doing her job.
Yeah.
And I met her a long time ago because her husband was a fireman, and my son's a fireman.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was a connection there. They knew each other in some connection.
Well, I look at it like, you know, it's a craft, right? Whatever acting is a craft, right?
Sure.
And so if you're a cabinet maker, there's some cabinet makers out there that if you talk to them, they're full of themselves because they build the best cabinets.
Sure.
It's the same thing. And other people are just like, I build cabinets.
Well, you have a career as a musician, right?
Yeah, something of a career.
Yeah, well, no, it's a career.
Yeah,
and it is. And I didn't know you that at all, hardly, but I knew you were going to be a regular guy.
Yeah,
most rock people are, except the few that think they're rock stars.
Well, you know what it is? Back to your point, it's it's about having that double life.
Yes.
I'm a big proponent of the double life because you can get the ego part of it out of the way with the fake part, and then you get to be yourself, who you actually are.
Yeah.
I do think sometimes super fame can make people weird because they have
to. Oh, if I got super famous, I would be a dick.
Well, but they also have to withdraw and be away from normal life.
Well, they do that, but there are two kinds. Like, there's Tom Hanks, right? Yep. Married for 38 years, whatever, lives quietly someplace, shows up, very nice, but an ordinary guy. What does he play mainly? Plainly Mays, ordinary guys in super interesting situations.
Yeah.
Versus somebody who get one of the Kardashians, you know, so full of themselves. I'm not speaking from any personal
I know that's the other tricky part because who knows? We don't know Tom. I've never met him. He could be a complete jerk and the Kardashian could be the sweetest person in the world. You never know.
Exactly
like, all
right.
The you know,
exactly
what
right. Which I've always learned.
Yeah.
You deal,
well, you were an ad guy.
Yeah.
It's all smoke and mirrors.
But you deal with what's in front of you and what's dealt to you.
Yeah.
You know, you play the cards that are dealt you.
Yeah.
And that's an important point for people to listen to. If I were to say anything to Miles and my own grandchildren, I have five of them, is do that.
Yeah.
They get it from my grandchildren, get it from me anyway. Grandpa, stop preaching.
You hear that, Miles? I hope you're and he's a listener. He'll hear you. He'll hear you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm having a great time.
I am too.
I think we've probably reached a point where we need to kind of draw this to a close.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean we wouldn't have you back again, though.
Well, thank you.
I have a feeling there's a few more stories in there.
I do, too. In fact,
you brought a book. You never even opened it.
Maybe we
That's it's my little writer's memo. It's things I think of.
Yeah.
Not to be forward, but maybe... Yeah. Maybe, wait, what's it say? Ingenious?
Ingenious ideas of cannabis. My daughter-in-law gave me that.
Not to be forward, but I think we should invite ourselves over to Chuck's house with our recording gear so we can hang out
in your cool, music?
Listen to some tunes and
talk
do an episode.
Music?
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
That
just came to me.
Often I get lost on the side when the music... You two, your minds get together. I didn't know this was coming. You know, this is
me neither.
I had no idea that
me
he
neither.
Knew so much about music. And
whenever we have a guest,
well,
that
I
is
knew
a
you were a
fan.
Music guy.
Oh yeah.
You know, the only things in my life are my family, art, and then art comes into painting, writing, and music.
Yeah,
and I'll listen to almost anything. I'll show it.
We'll get there. All right.
Well, hey, Chuck, thank you so much. I hope you had a good
pleasure.
Time. And thanks to our listeners for listening to to our stories with Chuck because they were great. I really enjoyed myself. And as you listeners know, if you would like to reach out to us, you can via email at twoguysonbi@gmail.com.
And don't forget to follow us on all the social media channels. And please subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform it is you listen to. But most importantly, just tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Yeah, we would appreciate it.
That's how we pick up most of our new listeners. Yeah. It's word of mouth.
Totally.
All right. Well, thanks again, Chuck. And thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Rich. Thanks, all Chuck.
Right. Thank you, everybody.
Until next time.
Hey, Rich.
Yeah?
I just found a couple hits of acid. What do you say we take them and go go like up into the daffodils and try and defuse a bomb?
I'm down.
Right. I just learned so much from
Let's
from
bring some acorns.
Trucking. Yeah, let's get some acorns.
I'm going to bring my acorn.
Let's go find our acorns.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, and one last thing. Whether you're a local or just visiting Block Island, pick up a copy of the Block Island Guide. Published annually for the last 35 years, it features 120 pages full of killer photos and all the details you need to know. Most importantly, it's fun to read. What shall we do with the sailor? What shall we do with the sailor?